Anakin's lips peeled off his teeth. I would thank you for this, if it were a gift of love. Trembling, shaking her head, she began to back away. No, Anakin. No. Palpatine was right. Sometimes it is the closest who cannot see. I loved you too much, Padme. He made a fist, and she couldn't breathe. I loved you too much to see you, to see what you are. A veil of red descended on the world. She clawed at her throat, but there was nothing there her hands could touch. Let her go, Anakin. His answer was a predator snarl over the body of its prey. You will not take her from me. She wanted to scream, to beg, to howl. No, Anakin, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I love you. But her locked throat strangled the truth inside her head, and the world veil of red smoked toward black. Let her go. Never. The ground fell away beneath her, and then a white flash of impact blasted her into night. In the Senate arena, lightning forked from the hands of a Sith and bent away from the gesture of a Jedi to shock Red Robes into unconsciousness. Then there were only the two of them. Their clash transcended the personal. When new lightning blazed, it was not Palpatine burning Yoda with his hate. It was the Lord of all Sith scorching the Master of all Jedi into a smoldering huddle of clothing and green flesh. A thousand years of hidden Sith exulted in their victory. Your time is over. The Sith rule the galaxy, now and forever. And it was the whole of the Jedi Order that rocketed from its huddle, making of its own body a weapon to blast the Sith to the ground.
At an end your rule is, and not short enough it was, I must say.
There appeared a blade the color of life. From the shadow of a black wing, a small weapon, a holdout, an easily concealed backup, a tiny bit of treachery expressing the core of Sith mastery, slid into a withered hand and spat a flame-colored blade of its own. When those blades met, it was more than Yoda against Palpatine, more than millennia of Sith against the legions of Jedi. This was the expression of the fundamental conflict of the universe itself. Light against dark. Winner take all. Obi-Wan knelt beside Padme's unconscious body, where she lay limp and broken in the smoky dusk. He felt for a pulse. It was thin and erratic. Anakin, Anakin, what have you done? In the Force, Anakin burned like a fusion torch. You turned her against me! Obi-Wan looked at the best friend he had ever had. You did that yourself, he said sadly. I'll give you a chance, Obi-Wan, for old time's sake. Walk away. If only I could. Go someplace out of the way. Retire. Meditate. That's what you like, isn't it? You don't have to fight for peace anymore. Peace is here. My empire is peace. Your empire? It will never have peace. It was founded on treachery and innocent blood. Don't make me kill you, Obi-Wan. If you are not with me, you are against me. Only Sith deal in absolutes, Anakin. The truth is never black and white. He rose, spreading empty hands. Let me take Padme to a med center. She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention. She stays. Anakin, you don't get to take her anywhere. You don't get to touch her. She's mine, do you understand? It's your fault, all of it. You made her betray me! Anakin. Anakin's hand sprouted a bar of blue plasma. Obi-Wan sighed. He brought out his own lightsaber and angled it before him. Then I will do what I must. You'll try, Anakin said, and leapt. Obi-Wan met him in the air. Blue blades crossed, and the volcano above echoed their lightning with a shout of fire. C-3PO cautiously poked his head around the rim of the skiff's hatch. Though his threat avoidance subroutines were in full screaming overload, and all he really wanted to be doing was finding some nice dark closet in which to fold himself and power down until this was all over, preferably an armored closet with a door that locked from the inside or could be welded shut. He wasn't particular on that point. He found himself nonetheless creeping down the skiff's landing ramp into what appeared to be a perfectly appalling rain of molten lava and burning cinders, which was an entirely ridiculous thing for any sensible droid to be doing. But he kept going because he hadn't liked the sound of those conversations at all. Not one little bit. He couldn't be entirely certain what the disagreement among the humans was concerned with, but one element had been entirely clear. "She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention." He shuffled out into the swirling smoke. Burning rocks clattered around him. The senator was nowhere to be seen, and even if he could find her, he had no idea how he could get her back to her ship. He certainly had not been designed for transporting anything heavier than a tray of cocktails. After all, weight-bearing capability was what cargo droids were for. But through the volcano's roar and the gusts of wind, his sonoreceptors picked up a familiar Furuhui Peru, which is auto-translation protocol converted to "Don't worry, you'll be all right."
"R2?"
C-3PO called.
"R2, are you out here?"
A few steps more, and C-3PO could see the little astromech. He tangled his manipulator arm in the senator's clothing and was dragging her across the landing deck.
"R2, stop that this instant! You'll damage her!"
R2-D2's dome swiveled to bring his photoreceptor to bear on the nervous protocol droid. "What exactly do you suggest?" it whistled.
"Well, oh, all right. We'll do it together."
There came a turning point in the clash of the light against the dark. It did not come from a flash of lightning or slash of energy blade, though there were these in plenty. It did not come from a flying kick or a surgically precise punch, though these were traded too. It came as the battle shifted from the holding office to the great chancellor's podium. It came as the hydraulic lift beneath the podium raised it on its tower of durasteel 100 meters and more, so that it became a laser point of battle, flaring at the focus of the vast emptiness of the Senate Arena. It came as the Force and the podium's controls ripped delegation pods free of the curving walls and made of them hammers, battering rams, catapult stones, crashing and crushing against each other in a rolling thunder roar that echoed the Senate's cheers for the galaxy's new emperor. It came when the Avatar of Light resolved into the lineage of the Jedi, when the lineage of the Jedi refined into one single Jedi. It came when Yoda found himself alone against the dark. In that lightning spear tornado of feet and fists and blades and bashing machines, his vision finally pierced the darkness that had clouded the Force. Finally, he saw the truth. This truth. That he, the Avatar of Light, supreme master of the Jedi Order, the fiercest, most implacable, most devastatingly powerful foe the darkness had ever known, just didn't have it. He'd never had it. He had lost before he started. He had lost before he was born. The Sith had changed. The Sith had grown, had adapted, had invested 1,000 years intensive study into every aspect of not only the Force, but Jedi lore itself, in preparation for exactly this day. The Sith had remade themselves. They had become new, while the Jedi had spent the last millennium training to refight the last war. The new Sith could not be destroyed with a lightsaber. They could not be burned away by any torch of the Force. The brighter his light, the darker their shadow. How could one win a war against the dark when war itself had become the dark's own weapon? He knew at that instant that this insight held the hope of the galaxy. But if he fell here, that hope would die with him. Yoda thought.
A problem this is.
Blade to blade, they were identical. After thousands of hours in lightsaber sparring, they knew each other better than brothers, more intimately than lovers. They were complementary halves of a single warrior. In every exchange, Obi-Wan gave ground. It was his way. And he knew that to strike Anakin down would burn his own heart to ash. Exchanges flashed. Leaps were sideslipped or met with flying kicks. Ankle sweeps skipped over and punches parried. The door of the control center fell in pieces, and then they were inside among the bodies. Consoles exploded in fountains of white-hot sparks as they ripped free of their moorings and hurtled through the air. Dead hands spasmed on triggers, and blaster bolts sizzled through impossibly intricate lattices of ricochet. Obi-Wan barely caught some and flipped them at Anakin. A desperation move. Anything to distract him. Anything to slow him down. Easily, contemptuously, Anakin sent them back, and the bolts flared between their blades until their galvaning faded and the particles of the packeted beams dispersed into radioactive fog.
Don't make me destroy you, Obi-Wan.
Anakin's voice had gone deeper than a well and bleak as the obsidian cliffs.
You're no match for the power of the dark side.
I've heard that before, Obi-Wan said through his teeth, parrying madly. But I never thought I'd hear it from you.
A roar of the Force blasted Obi-Wan back into a wall, smashing breath from his lungs, leaving him swaying, half-stunned. Anakin stepped over bodies and lifted his blade for the kill. Obi-Wan had only one trick left, one that wouldn't work twice, but it was a very good trick. It had, after all, worked rather splendidly on Grievous. He twitched one finger, reaching through the Force to reverse the polarity of the electro drivers in Anakin's mechanical hand. Durasteel fingers sprang open, and a lightsaber tumbled free. Obi-Wan reached. Anakin's lightsaber twisted in the air and flipped into his hand. He poised both blades in a cross before him. The flaw of power is arrogance.
You hesitate, Anakin said. The flaw of compassion.
It's not compassion, Obi-Wan said sadly. It's reverence for life, even yours. It's respect for the man you were. He sighed. It's regret for the man you should have been.
Anakin roared and flew at him, using both the Force and his body to crash Obi-Wan back into the wall once more. His hand seized Obi-Wan's wrists with impossible strength, forcing his arms wide. I am so sick of your lectures!
Dark power bore down with his grip. Obi-Wan felt the bones of his forearms bending, beginning to feather toward the green stick fractures that would come before the final breaks.
Oh, he thought. Oh, this is bad.
The end came with astonishing suddenness. The Shadow could feel how much it cost the little green freak to bend back his lightnings into the cage of energy that enclosed them both. The creature had reached the limits of his strength. The Shadow released its power for an instant, long enough only to whirl away through the air and alight upon one of the delegation pods as it flew past. And the creature leapt to follow, half a second too slow. The Shadow unleashed its lightning while the creature was still in the air, and the little green freak took its full power. The shock blasted him backward to crash against the podium, and he fell. He fell a long way. The base of the arena was 100 meters below, littered with twisted scraps and jags of metal from the pods destroyed in the battle. And as the little green freak fell, finally, above, the victorious Shadow became once again only Palpatine. A very old, very tired man, gasping for air as he leaned on the pod's rail. Old he might have been, but there was nothing wrong with his eyesight. He scanned the wreckage below, and he did not see a body. He flicked a finger, and in the Chancellor's podium, a dozen meters away, a switch tripped and sirens sounded throughout the enormous building. Another surge of the force sent his pod streaking in a downward spiral to the holding office at the base of the podium tower. Clone troops were already swarming into it.
"It was Yoda," he said as he swung out of the pod. "Another assassination attempt. Find him and kill him. If you have to, blow up the building."
He didn't have time to direct the search personally. The force hummed a warning in his bones. Lord Vader was in danger. Mortal danger. Clones scattered. He stopped one officer.
"You, call the shuttle dock and tell them I'm on my way. Have my ship warmed and ready."
The officer saluted, and Palpatine, with vigor that surprised even himself, ran. With the help of the Force, Yoda sprinted along the surface accessway below the arena faster than a human being could run. He sliced conduits as he passed, filling the accessway behind him with coils of high-voltage cables, twisting and spitting lightning. Every few dozen meters, he paused just long enough to slash a hole in the accessway's wall. Once his pursuers got past the cables, they would have to divide their forces to search each of his possible exits. But he knew they could afford to. There were thousands of them. He pulled his comlink from inside his robe without slowing down. The Force whispered a set of coordinates, and he spoke them into the link.
"Delay not," he added. "Swiftly closing is the pursuit. Failed I have, and kill me they will."
The convocation center of the Galactic Senate was a drum-mounted dome more than a kilometer in diameter. Even with the aid of the Force, Yoda was breathing hard by the time he reached its edge. He cut through the floor beneath him and dropped down into another accessway, this one used for maintenance on the huge lighting system that shone downward onto Republic Plaza through transparent-steel panels that floored the underside of the huge dome's rim. He cut into the light well. The reflected wattage nearly blinded him to the vertiginous drop below the transparent-steel on which he stood. Without hesitation, he cut through that as well and dived headlong into the night. Catching the nether edges of his long cloak to use as an improvised airfoil, he let the Force guide him in a soaring freefall away from the convocation center. He was too small to trigger its automated defense perimeter, but the open cockpit speeder toward which he fell would get blasted from the sky if it deviated 1 meter inward from its curving course. He released his robe so that it flapped upward, making a sort of drogue that righted him in the air so that he fell feet first into the speeder's passenger seat beside Bail Organa. While Yoda strapped himself in, the senator from Alderaan pulled the rented speeder through a turn that would have impressed Anakin Skywalker and shot away toward the nearest intersection of Coruscant's congested skyways. Yoda's eyes squeezed closed.
"Master Yoda, are you wounded?"
"Only my pride,"
Yoda said, and meant it. Though Bail could not possibly understand how deep that wound went, nor how it bled.
"Only my pride."
With Anakin's grip on his wrists, bending his arms near to breaking, forcing both their lightsabers down in a slow but unstoppable arc, Obi-Wan let go of everything. His hopes, his fears, his obligation to the Jedi, his promise to Qui-Gon, his failure with Anakin, and their lightsabers. Startled, Anakin instinctively shifted his Force grip, releasing one wrist to reach for his blade. In that instant, Obi-Wan twisted free of his other hand and with the Force caught up with his own blade, reversing it along his forearm so that his swift parry of Anakin's thundering overhand not only blocked the strike, but directed both blades to slice through the wall against which he stood. He slid Anakin's following thrust through the wall on the opposite side, guiding both blades again up and over his head in a circular sweep so that he could use the power of Anakin's next chop to drive himself backward through the wall, outside into the smoke and the falling cinders. Anakin followed, constantly attacking. Obi-Wan again gave ground, retreating along a narrow balcony high above the black sand shoreline of a lake of fire. Mustafar hummed with death behind his back,
only a moment away, somewhere out there among the rivers of molten rock. Obi-Wan let Anakin drive him toward it. It was a place, he decided, they should reach together. Anakin forced him back and back, slamming his blade down with strength that seemed to flow from the volcano overhead. He spun and whirled and sliced razor-sharp shards of steel from the wall and shot them at Obi-Wan with the full heat of his fury. He slashed through a control panel along the walkway, and the ray shield that had held back the lava storm vanished. Fire rained around them. Obi-Wan backed to the end of the balcony. Behind him was only a power conduit no thicker than his arm, connecting it to the main collection plant of the old lava mine, over a riverbed that flowed with white-hot molten stone. Obi-Wan stepped backward onto the conduit without hesitation, his balance flawless as he parried chop after chop. Anakin came on. Out on the tightrope of power conduit, their blades blurred even faster than before. They chopped and slashed and parried and blocked. Lava bombs thundered to the ground below, shedding drops of burning stone that scorched their robes. Smoke shrouded the planet star, and now the only light came from the hell glow of the lava below them and from their blades themselves. Flares of energy crackled and spat. This was not Sith against Jedi. This was not light against dark or good against evil. It had nothing to do with duty or philosophy, religion or morals. It was Anakin against Obi-Wan, personally. Just the two of them and the damage they had done to each other. Obi-Wan backflipped from the conduit to a coupling nexus of the main collection plant. When Anakin flew in pursuit, Obi-Wan leapt again. They spun and whirled throughout its levels, up its stairs, and across its platforms. They battled out onto the collection panels, over which the cascades of lava poured. And Obi-Wan, out on the edge of the collection panel, hunching under a curve of durasteel that splashed aside gouts of lava, deflecting force blasts and countering strikes from this creature of rage that had been his best friend, suddenly comprehended an unexpectedly profound truth. The man he faced was everything Obi-Wan had devoted his life to destroying. Murderer, traitor, fallen Jedi, Lord of the Sith. And here and now, despite it all, Obi-Wan still loved him. Yoda had said it, flat out. Allow such attachments to pass out of one's life, a Jedi must. But Obi-Wan had never let himself understand. He had argued for Anakin, made excuses, covered for him again and again and again. All the while, this attachment he denied even feeling had blinded him to the dark path his best friend walked. Obi-Wan knew there was, in the end, only one answer for attachment. He let it go. The lake of fire, no longer held back by the ray shield, chewed away the shore on which the plant stood, and the whole massive structure broke loose, sending both warriors skidding, scrabbling desperately for handholds, down tilting durasteel slopes that were rapidly becoming cliffs. They hung from scraps of cable as the plant superstructure floated out into the lava, sinking slowly as its lower levels melted and burned away. Anakin kicked off from the toppling superstructure, swinging through a wide arc over the lava's boil. Obi-Wan shoved out and met him there, holding the cable with one hand and the Force, angling his blade high. Anakin flicked a Sheen whipcrack at his knees. Obi-Wan yanked his legs high and slashed through the cable above Anakin's hand, and Anakin fell. Pockets of gas boiled to the surface of the lava, gouting flame like arms reaching to gather him in. But Anakin's momentum had already swung back toward the dissolving wreck of the collection plant, and the Force carried him within reach of another cable. Obi-Wan whipped his legs around his cable, altering its arc to bring him within reach of the one from which Anakin now dangled. But Anakin was onto this game now, and he swung cable to cable ahead of Obi-Wan's advance, using the Force to carry himself higher and higher, forcing Obi-Wan to counter by doing the same. On this terrain, altitude was everything.
simultaneous surges of the force carried them both spinning up off the cables to the slant of the toppling superstructure's crane deck. Obi-Wan barely got his feet on the metal before Anakin pounced on him, and they stood almost toe-to-toe, blades whirling and crashing on all sides, while around them, the collection plant's maintenance droids still tinkered mindlessly away at the doomed machinery, as they would continue to do until lava closed over them and they melted to their constituent molecules and dissolved into the flow. A roar, louder even than the volcano's eruption, came from the river ahead. Metal began to shriek and stretch. The river dropped away in a vertical sheet of fire that vanished into boiling clouds of smoke and gases. The whole collection plant was being carried inexorably out over a vast lava fall. Obi-Wan decided he didn't really want to see what was at the bottom. He turned Anakin's blade aside with a two-handed block and landed a solid kick that knocked the two apart. Before Anakin could recover his balance, Obi-Wan took a running leap that became a graceful dive headlong off the crane deck. He hurtled down past level after level, and only a few tens of meters above the lava itself, the force called a dangling cable to his hand, turning his dive into a swing that carried him high and far to the very limit of the cable. And he let it go. As though jumping from a swing in the temple playrooms, his velocity sent him flying up and out over a catenary arc that shot him toward the river shore. Toward, but not quite to. But the force had led him here, and again it had not betrayed him. Below, humming along a few meters above the lava river, came a big, slow, old repulsor lift platform, carrying droids and equipment out toward a collection plant that its programming was not sophisticated enough to realize was about to be destroyed. Obi-Wan flipped in the air and let the force bring him to a cat-footed landing. An adder-quick stab of his lightsaber disabled the platform's guidance system, and Obi-Wan was able to direct it back toward the shore with a simple shift of his weight. He turned to watch as the collection plank shrieked like the damned in a Corellian hell, crumbling over the brink of the falls until it vanished into invisible destruction. Obi-Wan lowered his head. Goodbye, old friend. But the Force whispered a warning, and Obi-Wan lifted his head in time to see Anakin come hurtling toward him out from the boil of smoke above the falls, perched on a tiny repulsor lift droid. The little droid was vastly swifter than Obi-Wan's logy old cargo platform, and Anakin was easily able to swing around Obi-Wan and cut him off from the shore. Obi-Wan shifted weight one way, then another, but Anakin's droid was nimble as a sand panther. There was no way around, and this close to the lava, the heat was intense enough to crisp Obi-Wan's hair. "This is the end for you, Master," he said. "I wish it were otherwise." "Yes, Anakin." "So do I," Obi-Wan said as he sprinted into a leaping dive, making a spear of his blade. Anakin leaned aside and deflected the thrust almost contemptuously. He missed a cut at Obi-Wan's legs as the Jedi Master flew past him. Obi-Wan turned his dive into a forward roll that left him barely teetering on the rim of a low cliff, just above the soft black sand of the riverbank. Anakin snarled a curse as he realized he'd been suckered and leapt off his droid at Obi-Wan's back. Half a second too slow. Obi-Wan's world parry didn't meet Anakin's blade. It met his knee, then his other knee. And while Anakin was still in the air, burned off lower legs only starting their topple down the cliff, Obi-Wan's recovery to guard brought his blade through Anakin's left arm above the elbow. He stepped back as Anakin fell. Anakin dropped his lightsaber, clawing at the edge of the cliff with his mechanical hand, but his grip was too powerful for the lava bank, and it crumbled, and he slid down onto the black sand. His severed legs and his severed arm rolled into the lava below him and burned to ash in sudden bursts of scarlet flame. The same color, Obi-Wan observed distantly, as a Sith blade. Anakin scrabbled at the soft black sand, but struggling only made him slip farther, The sand itself was hot enough that digging his Durasteel fingers into it burned off his glove, and his robes began to smolder.
Obi-Wan picked up Anakin's lightsaber. He lifted his own as well, weighing them in his hands. Anakin had based his design upon Obi-Wan's. So similar they were. So differently they had been used.
Obi-Wan!
He looked down. Flame licked the fringes of Anakin's robe, and his long hair had blackened and was beginning to char.
You were the chosen one. It was said you would destroy the Sith, not join them. It was you who would bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness. You were my brother, Anakin, said Obi-Wan Kenobi. I loved you, but I could not save you.
A flash of metal through the sky, and Obi-Wan felt the darkness closing in around them both. He knew that ship, the Chancellor's shuttle. Now, he supposed, the Emperor's shuttle. Yoda had failed. He might have died. He might have left Obi-Wan alone, the last Jedi. Below his feet, Darth Vader burst into flame.
I hate you, he screamed.
Obi-Wan looked down. It would be a mercy to kill him. He was not feeling merciful. He was feeling calm and clear. And he knew that to climb down to that black beach might cost him more time than he had. Another Sith Lord approached. In the end, there was only one choice. It was a choice he had made many years before, when he had passed his trials of Jedi knighthood and sworn himself to the Jedi forever. In the end, he was still Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he was still a Jedi, and he would not murder a helpless man. He would leave it to the will of the Force. He turned and walked away. After a moment, he began to run. He began to run because he realized if he was fast enough, there was one thing he could still do for Anakin. He still could do honor to the memory of the man he had loved and to the vanished order they both had served. At the landing deck, C-3PO stood on the skiff's landing ramp, waving frantically.
Master Kenobi, please hurry.
Where's Padme?
Already inside, sir, but she is badly hurt.
Obi-Wan ran up the ramp to the skiff's cockpit and fired the engines. As the Chancellor's shuttle curved in toward the landing deck, the sleek, mirror-finished skiff streaked for the stars. Obi-Wan never looked back.
Chapter 21 A New Jedi Order.
A Naboo skiff reverted to real space and flashed toward an alien medical installation in the asteroid belt of Polis Massa. Tantive IV re-entered reality only moments behind. And on Mustafar, below the red thunder of a volcano, a Sith Lord had already snatched from sand of black glass the charred torso and head of what once had been a man, and had already leapt for the cliff bank above with effortless strength, and had already roared to his clones to bring the medical capsule immediately. The Sith Lord lowered the limbless man tenderly to the cool ground above, and laid his hand across the cracked and blackened mess that once had been his brow, and he set his will upon him.
Live, Lord Vader. Live, my apprentice. Live.
Beyond the transparent crystal of the observation dome on the airless crags of Polis Massa, the galaxy wheeled in a spray of hard, cold pinpricks through the veil of infinite night. Beneath that dome sat Yoda. He did not look at the stars. He sat a very long time. Even after nearly 900 years, the road to self-knowledge was rugged enough to leave him bruised and bleeding. He spoke softly, but not to himself. Though no one was with him, he was not alone.
My failure this was. Failed the Jedi I did.
He spoke to the Force, and the Force answered him.
Do not blame yourself, my old friend.
As it sometimes had these past 13 years, When the Force spoke to him, it spoke in the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn.
Too old I was,
Yoda said.
Too rigid, too arrogant to see that the old way is not the only way. These Jedi, I trained to become the Jedi who had trained me long centuries ago. But those ancient Jedi, of a different time they were. Changed has the galaxy. Changed the Order did not. Because let it change, I did not.
More easily said than done, my friend.
An infinite mystery is the Force.
Yoda lifted his head and turned his gaze out into the wheel of stars.
Much to learn there still is.
And you will have time to learn it.
Infinite knowledge.
Yoda shook his head.
Infinite time does that require?
With my help, you can learn to join with the Force, yet retain consciousness. You can join your light to it forever. Perhaps in time, even your physical self. Yoda did not move.
Eternal life.
The ultimate goal of the Sith, yet they can never achieve it. It comes only by the release of self, not the exaltation of self. It comes through compassion, not greed. Love is the answer to the darkness.
Become one with the Force, yet influence still to have,
Yoda mused,
a power greater than all it is.
It cannot be granted. It can only be taught. It is yours to learn, if you wish it. Slowly, Yoda nodded.
A very great Jedi Master you have become, Qui-Gon Jinn. A very great Jedi Master you always were, but too blind I was to see it.
He rose and folded his hands before him and inclined his head in the Jedi bow of respect. The bow of the student in the presence of the Master.
Your apprentice, I gratefully become.
He was well into his first lesson when the hatch cycled open behind him. He turned. In the corridor beyond stood Bail Organa. He looked stricken. Obi-Wan is asking for you at the surgical theater, he said. It's Padme. She's dying. Obi-Wan sat beside her, holding one cold, still hand in both of his. Don't give up, Padme. Is it? Her eyes rolled blindly. It's a girl. Anakin thinks it's a girl. We don't know yet. In a minute. You have to stay with us. Below the opaque tent that shrouded her from chest down, a pair of surgical droids assisted with her labor. A general medical droid fussed and tinkered among the clutter of scanners and equipment.
If it's a girl... Oh no!
Obi-Wan cast an appeal toward the medical droid. Can't you do something?
All organic damage has been repaired.
The droid checked another readout.
This systemic failure cannot be explained.
Not physically, Obi-Wan thought. He squeezed her hand as though he could keep life within her body by simple pressure. Padme, you have to hold on.
If it's a girl, she gasped. Name her Leia.
One of the surgical droids circled out from behind the tent, cradling in its padded arms a tiny infant, already swabbed clean and breathing, but without even the hint of tears. The droid announced softly,
It's a boy.
Padme reached for him with her trembling free hand, but she had no strength to take him. She could only touch her fingers to the baby's forehead. She smiled weakly. Luke. The other droid now rounded the tent as well, with another clean, quietly solemn infant.
And a girl.
But she had already fallen back against her pillow. Padme, you have twins, Obi-Wan said desperately. They need you. Please hang on.
Anakin.
Anakin isn't here, Padme, he said, though he didn't think she could hear.
Anakin. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Anakin, please. I love you.
In the Force,
Obi-Wan felt Yoda's approach, and he looked up to see the ancient master beside Bail Organa, both staring the same grave question down through the surgical theater's observation panel. The only answer Obi-Wan had was a helpless shake of his head. Padme reached across with her free hand, with the hand she had laid upon the brow of her firstborn son, and pressed something into Obi-Wan's palm. For a moment, her eyes cleared, and she knew him. "Obi-Wan, there is still good in him. I know there is. Still." Her voice faded to an empty sigh, and she sagged back against the pillow. Half a dozen different scanners buzzed with conflicting alarm tones, and the medical droids shooed him from the room. He stood in the hall outside, looking down at what she had pressed into his hand. It was a pendant of some kind, an amulet. Unfamiliar sigils carved into some sort of organic material, strung on a loop of leather. In the Force, he could feel traces of the touch of her skin. When Yoda and Bail came for him, he was still standing there, staring at it. "She put this in my hand." For what seemed the dozenth time this day, he found himself blinking back tears. "And I don't even know what it is."
"Precious to her, it must have been," Yoda said slowly. "Buried with her. Perhaps it should be."
Obi-Wan looked down at the simple, childlike symbols carved into it, and felt from it in the Force soaring echoes of transcendent love and the bleak, black despair of unendurable heartbreak. "Yes," he said. "Yes, perhaps that would be best." Around a conference table on Tantive IV, Bail Organa, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Yoda met to decide the fate of the galaxy.
"To Naboo, send her body."
Yoda stretched his head high, as though tasting a current in the Force.
"Pregnant, she must still appear. Hidden, safe, the children must be kept. Foundation of the new Jedi Order they will be."
"We should split them up," Obi-Wan said. "Even if the Sith find one, the other may survive. I can take the boy, Master Yoda, and you take the girl. We can hide them away, keep them safe, train them as Anakin should have been trained."
"No."
The ancient master lowered his head again, closing his eyes, resting his chin on his hands that were folded over the head of his stick. Obi-Wan looked uncertain. "But how are they to learn the self-discipline a Jedi needs? How are they to master skills of the Force?"
"Jedi training, the sole source of self-discipline is not. When right is the time for skills to be taught, to us, the living Force will bring them. Until then, wait we will, and watch and learn."
"I can..." Bail Organa stopped, flushing slightly. "I'm sorry to interrupt, Masters. I know little about the Force, but I do know something of love. The Queen and I, well, we've always talked of adopting a girl. If you have no objection, I would like to take Leia to Alderaan and raise her as our daughter. She would be loved with us." Yoda and Obi-Wan exchanged a look. Yoda tilted his head.
"No happier fate could any child ask for. With our blessing and that of the Force, let Leia be your child."
Bail stood, a little jerkily, as though he simply could no longer keep his seat. His flush had turned from embarrassment to pure, uncomplicated joy. "Thank you, Masters. I don't know what else to say. Thank you, that's all. What of the boy? Kleeg Law still lives on Tatooine, I think. And Anakin's stepbrother. Owen, that's it. And his wife, Beru, still work the moisture farm outside Mos Eisley."
"As close to kinfolk as the boy can come,"
Yoda said approvingly.
"But Tatooine, not like Alderaan it is, deep in the Outer Rim, a wild and dangerous planet."
"Anakin survived it," Obi-Wan said. "Luke can too. And I can, well, I could take him there and watch over him, protect him from the worst of the planet's dangers, until he can learn to protect himself.
Like a father you wish to be, young Obi-Wan?
More an eccentric old uncle, I think. It is a part I can play very well. To keep watch over Anakin's son. Obi-Wan sighed, finally allowing his face to register a suggestion of his old gentle smile. I can't imagine a better way to spend the rest of my life.
Settled it is, then. To Tatooine, you will take him.
Bail moved toward the door. If you'll excuse me, Masters, I have to call the Queen. He stopped in the doorway, looking back.
Master Yoda, do you think Padme's twins will be able to defeat Palpatine?
Strong the Force runs in the Skywalker line. Only hope we can. Until the time is right, disappear we will.
Bail nodded. And I must do the same, metaphorically at least. You may hear disturbing things about what I do in the Senate. I must appear to support the new Empire and my comrades with me. It was Padme's wish, and she was a shrewder political mind than I'll ever be. Please trust that what we do is only a cover for our true task. We will never betray the legacy of the Jedi. I will never surrender the Republic to the Sith.
Trust in this, we always will. Go now. For happy news, your queen is waiting.
Bail Organa bowed and vanished into the corridor. When Obi-Wan moved to follow, Yoda's gimmer stick barred his way.
A moment, Master Kenobi. In your solitude on Tatooine, training I have for you. I am my new master.
Obi-Wan blinked. Your new master?
Yes.
Yoda smiled up at him.
And your old one.
C-3PO shuffled along the starship's hallway beside R2-D2, following Senator Organa, who had, by all accounts, inherited them both.
I'm certain I can't say why she malfunctioned,
he was telling the little astromech.
Organics are so terribly complicated, you know.
Ahead, the senator was met by a man whose uniform C-3PO's confirmation recognition algorithm informed him, indicated he was a captain in the Royal Alderaan Civil Fleet.
I'm placing these droids in your care, the senator said. Have them cleaned, polished, and refitted with the best of everything. They will belong to my new daughter.
How lovely,
C-3PO exclaimed.
His daughter is the child of Master Anakin and Senator Amidala,
he explained to R2-D2.
I can hardly wait to tell her all about her parents. I'm sure she will be very proud.
Oh, and the protocol droid? Senator Organa said thoughtfully. Have its mind wiped. The captain saluted.
Oh,
said C-3PO.
Oh, dear.
In the newly renamed Emperor Palpatine Surgical Reconstruction Center on Coruscant, a hyper-sophisticated prototype Ubrickian DD-13 surgical droid moved away from the project that it and an enhanced FX-6 medical droid had spent many days rebuilding. It beckoned to a dark-robed shadow that stood at the edge of the pool of high-intensity light.
My lord, the construction is finished. He lives.
Good. Good. The shadow flowed into the pool of light as though the overhead illuminators had malfunctioned. Droid stepped back as it came to the rim of the surgical table. On the table was strapped the very first patient of the N-Pal Su Recon Center. To some eyes, it might have been a pieced-together hybrid of droid and human, encased in a life support shell of gleaming black, managed by a thoracic processor that winked pale color against the shadow's cloak. To some eyes, its jointed limbs might have looked ungainly, clumsy, even monstrous. The featureless curves of black that served it for eyes might have appeared inhuman, and the underthrust grillwork of its vocabulator might have suggested the jaws of a saurian predator built of polished blast armor. But to the shadow, it was glorious. A magnificent jewel box created both to protect and to exhibit the greatest treasure of the Sith. Terrifying.
mesmerizing. Perfect. The table slowly rotated to vertical, and the shadow leaned close. Lord Vader. Lord Vader. Can you hear me? This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker forever. The first dawn of light in your universe brings pain. The light burns you. It will always burn you. Part of you will always lie upon black glass sand beside a lake of fire, while flames chew upon your flesh. You can hear yourself breathing. It comes hard and harsh, and it scrapes nerves already raw, but you cannot stop it. You can never stop it. You cannot even slow it down. You don't even have lungs anymore. Mechanisms hardwired into your chest breathe for you. They will pump oxygen into your bloodstream forever. Lord Vader, Lord Vader, can you hear me? And you can't, not in the way you once did. Sensors in the shell that prisons your head trickle meaning directly into your brain. You open your scorched pale eyes. Optical sensors integrate light and shadow into a hideous simulacrum of the world around you. Or perhaps the simulacrum is perfect, and it is the world that is hideous. Padme, are you here? Are you all right? You try to say, but another voice speaks for you. Out from the vocabulator that serves you for burned away lips and tongue and throat.
Padme, are you here? Are you all right?
I'm very sorry, Lord Vader. I'm afraid she died. It seems in your anger, you killed her. This burns hotter than the lava had.
No. No, it is not possible.
You loved her. You will always love her. You could never will her death. Never. But you remember. You remember all of it. You remember the dragon that you brought Vader forth from your heart to slay. You remember the cold venom in Vader's blood. You remember the furnace of Vader's fury and the black hatred of seizing her throat to silence her lying mouth. And there is one blazing moment in which you finally understand that there was no dragon, that there was no Vader, that there was only you, only Anakin Skywalker. That it was all you, is you, only you. You did it. You killed her. You killed her because finally, when you could have saved her, when you could have gone away with her, when you could have been thinking about her, you were thinking about yourself. It is in this blazing moment that you finally understand the trap of the dark side. The final cruelty of the Sith. Because now yourself is all you will ever have. And you rage and scream and reach through the Force to crush the shadow who has destroyed you. But you are so far less now than what you were. You are more than half machine. You are like a painter gone blind, a composer gone deaf. You can remember where the power was, but the power you can touch is only a memory. And so with all your world-destroying fury, it is only droids around you that implode, and equipment, and the table on which you were strapped shatters. And in the end, you cannot touch the shadow. In the end, you do not even want to. In the end, the shadow is all you have left. Because the shadow understands you. The shadow forgives you. The shadow gathers you unto itself, and within your furnace heart, you burn in your own flame. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker. Forever. The long night has begun. Huge, solemn crowds line Palace Plaza in Theed, the capital of Naboo, as 6 beautiful white Gualars draw a flower-draped open casket bearing the remains of a beloved senator through the triumphal arch, her fingers finally and forever clasping a snippet of Japar, one that had been carved long ago by the hand of a 9-year-old boy from an obscure desert planet in the far outer rim. On the jungle planet of Dagobah, a Jedi master inspects the unfamiliar swamp of his exile. From the bridge of a Star Destroyer, 2 Sith Lords stand with a sector governor named Tarkin and survey the growing skeleton of a spherical battle station the size of a moon. But even in the deepest night, there are some who dream of dawn. On Alderaan, the prince consort delivers a baby girl into the loving arms of his queen. And on Tatooine, a Jedi master brings an infant boy to the homestead of Owen and Beru Lars. Then he rides his Eopie off into the Jundland wastes, toward the setting suns. The dark is generous, and it is patient, and it always wins. But in the heart of its strength lies weakness. One lone candle is enough to hold it back. Love is more than a candle. Love can ignite the stars. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, by Matthew Stover, based on the story and screenplay by George Lucas. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2005. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2005, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved. Part 1. Victory. The dark is generous. Its first gift is concealment. Our true faces lie in the dark beneath our skins. Our true hearts remain shadowed deeper still. But the greatest concealment lies not in protecting our secret truths, but in hiding from us the truths of others. The dark protects us from what we dare not know. Its second gift is comforting illusion, the ease of gentle dreams in night's embrace. The beauty that imagination brings to what would repel in day's harsh light. But the greatest of its comforts is the illusion that the dark is temporary, that every night brings a new day, because it is day that is temporary. Day is the illusion. Its third gift is the light itself. As days are defined by the nights that divide them, as stars are defined by the infinite black through which they wheel, the dark embraces the light and brings it forth from the center of its own self. With each victory of the light, it is the dark that wins.